I'm Fran Kritz, editor of the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation public health page. In 2009, the MATCH project was launched, mobilizing action toward community health. We're speaking today with Bridget Buskey, who's the deputy director of the MATCH project. The MATCH project is funded by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. Bridget, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
We're talking today because Preventing Chronic Disease, a journal of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, has published in this issue a set of essays that were commissioned by the MATCH project about improving population health. Tell us about the essays in this issue of Preventing Chronic Disease.
Dave Kindig, who is a co-director of the MATCH project, recruited a number of very interesting individuals from a variety of fields and application areas to write essays for us. John Witte wrote about experience and use of incentives in education. John Mullahy and Robert Haverman each came at it from an economic perspective. Dan Fox and David Ash and Rachel Werner talked about lessons that can be learned from healthcare. Ray Baxter talked about using existing programs and policies as incentives by making better use of regulations already in place. Tom Oliver talked about the use of rankings. And Peter Smith talked about the use of targets as incentives in Europe.
Let's talk about incentives for a moment, because that was the focus of some of the essays in this issue. What kinds of ideas do some of the authors present with respect to incentives for improving community health?
Well, often when you think about incentives, people think about financial incentives, either rewarding certain kinds of performance or behaviors or penalizing poor performance, for example. But there are also a wide range of non-financial incentives that some of these essays discuss. Things like regulations and legal ways to motivate health improvement. There are educational incentives as well. So there's a wide range of different kinds of both financial and non-financial incentives that might improve population health.
Are there things that don't work with respect to incentives when it comes to population health, do you think?
Sure, we can learn things from other fields, such as the field of education, where various kinds of incentives have been in place. There, we've learned that there's a tendency to, for teachers, for example, when they have their performance being rewarded for good test scores for their students, there's a tendency for them to teach towards the test. And so rather than teaching the broad curriculum, they will just teach materials specifically in the areas that they know are going to get tested on. There's also some other things that can happen with incentives that have it not work, right? Things, gaming strategies or adverse selection, or incentives just sometimes don't always produce the desired outcome. If they're not carefully designed, then they won't work well.
People who've heard about incentives, particularly for health, know some standards, coffee shop, gift cards, and a slight reduction in a gym membership. But you've learned about some very unusual incentives as well. Can you give us an example?
Sure, there's one quite interesting example from my home state of Wisconsin, where there's a project that's called Road Crew, where young men between the ages of 21 and 34 who were most susceptible to drunk driving, to both causing accidents and being injured in them and injuring others, this program called Road Crew involves providing these young men with limousine rides to and between and home from taverns. And so they go out for an entire evening using a limo, and at the end of the evening they don't have to admit to their friends that they're too drunk to drive. They just say, oh, my limo is here, I'm leaving. And this has proven to reduce drunk driving in the communities where this program has been implemented. And furthermore, it started off as a funded program, but it's now a fee-based system, so it's self-sustaining, and so the benefit to the participants must outweigh the cost in their minds, and so it's a very successful program.
When it comes to the MATCH project, when you've looked at the various types of incentives, is it necessarily a prize or money, or are there some unique incentives that might work for improving community health?
Sure, as well as the financial incentives, and I talked about a few non-financial incentives. One that I didn't mention was the whole concept of reputation as a motivational factor. And that's what we are using in the MATCH project when we release the county health rankings. The notion of a poorer ranking is very motivating to for communities to take action and try to figure out what they can do to improve their health and or improve their rank and then ultimately their health.
Bridget, last question for you, and that is there a timeline for beginning to look at some, the incentives and how well some of them work so that other communities might be able to implement those as well?
Well, this is an ongoing area of investigation for us on the MATCH project. We are about halfway through our project and commissioning these essays and having experts such as Michael Rothschild, who wrote the social marketing essay talking about the road crew, and then people like Thomas Oliver, who's helping us think through how rankings can motivate performance. These people are helping us out with this research, and that we hope that over the next couple of years we will be able to do more of pulling together more information about what works and what doesn't work for incentives.
The essays are in the September issue of Preventing Chronic Disease, Centers for Disease Control and Prevention Journal. Bridget Bosky, Deputy Director of the MATCH Project at the University of Wisconsin Population Health Institute. Thanks so much for talking to us about this special issue.
Thank you, Fran.
I'm Fran Kritz for the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation.